Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Ernest, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors. And it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now.
All right, guys. So a lot of people ask us, how do they make a podcast? So I'm going to let you know on a secret. On the easiest, most productive way to start a podcast and get it up and running, and that is the app called Anchor. It's free. They have all kind of cool creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. They will distribute your podcast for you to all of the major outlets, including Spotify, Apple, Google, and many more. And you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one simple, easy place. So if you're interested in starting a podcast, go download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Let's do it.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Bag drop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop. You talked about FICO score, right? Sure. Can you just explain the FICO?
So FICO is Fair Isaac Credit Company. They're the one that creates the whole score from all three bureaus for you. They use the latest Vantage, where it'll be Vantage 10, Vantage 8 that we're using. We're in Vantage 10. They use the latest Vantage.
So what is it? What is that? Because people might not know what
so
Vantage is.
So it's the way the score is created, the data that's put into the score. So they don't pick every single, like let's say your American Express card. Certain cards they pick out and they create the score. So department, that's why I speak about department store card. They don't help your credit that much. So stay away from them. Stay into the Visa, the MasterCards, and so forth. Those are the ones that create the scores for you. And then your payment history, how much new credit you have, utilization, that's all that's calculated into it.
Okay, okay. So, all right. So as far as like there's different factors that determine your credit score, right?
Right, correct.
What are some of the key factors that people should be aware of?
One of the major factors, and I see this on everyone's credit report, is utilization, just like you were talking about. You know, you need to keep your utilization under 30%. Once you start hitting 31, 32% of that utilization, your score drops significantly. And it takes 2 months, 2 billion cycles for it to go up unless you call the bank, like you didn't ask them just to do a courtesy for you.
Right.
A lot of people don't know how to do that, right? Or they don't know they could do that. So one of them is keep the utilization very low, 30% or below. Let's say you have 5 cards. And and you instead of you putting all the charges on one card, split it across 3 cards to keep it under 30%. Your score will stay high. Second thing is increase. 6 increases a year. If you do more than that, your score drops. Each increase 2.5 points, right? And banks only give you what they see other banks give you. So if you apply for, in your scenario, if you do that now, it would have been hard for you to get all those cards, right? Because banks are tight on giving out credit. So banks only give you what they see other banks are giving you. So let's say you apply for Citibank or Chase today. You got denied. There's an inquiry there. If another bank don't see a card open up, they're not going to extend the credit to you. Right? So new credit.
All right. So 30%. So if you have $10,000 in credit available, only use $3,000.
Correct.
That's
correct.
Pretty much in a nutshell.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, wait, one last thing also. Like if you're trying to build your score and you're in the 650, you're lingering around the 650 range, you shouldn't pay off your card in full every month. Because the bank needs to make a little bit of interest off of you to report okay on your credit report.
And you see a history.
It's, correct. Yeah. It's only until you're like a 750 or higher score, you can pay your card off in full because your score is already built.
Right.
But if you're in a 650 and you're trying to raise it, don't pay the card off in
full. Can you just explain that? Because that's actually the first time I'm hearing that in detail. Like, so you don't pay off the credit card in full?
Don't pay it in full every month. Like every other month you could pay it off in full.
Why not every month?
Because the bank wouldn't report okay on the credit report on the slot that says okay, it'll say no data.
Okay.
No data is like no credit.
Okay.
So you gotta like trick the system, let them make a little bit of interest off of you. Because remember, the bank's in the business of making money, right?
Right.
And that's why they charge these interest rates.
So they want to see that you're a valued customer over a period of time.
Exactly.
Right. So if I have $1,000 and I max out $1,000 and I pay $1,000, that's not really showing anything.
Exactly. And that's not helping them because they're not making money.
Right.
So there's no incentive for them to report okay on the credit report. Yeah, they'll report you have a zero balance. But you don't have that okay, that green mark on your credit report. It says no data.
Okay.
And the only way you see that is actually from the credit report from the bureaus. Mm. You wouldn't see it on like a mortgage report or in your online report. It's when you pull the actual report from the bureaus is when you see that.
All right. So you got some framework and then you got some interesting stories from me and Troy. But now we're going to dive deep into the world of credit. And we're going to hopefully drop some gems that can save you guys a lot of time and money.
Yeah. Pens and pads, get ready. All right, so now we're going to get into the part that most people aren't aware of on their credit report that are actually happening. But, you know, when you make a late payment or you miss a payment or you miss a few, there's something that's called a derogatory.
That's correct.
Go ahead. You want to explain the impact that has and some examples of it?
Well, the derogatory section, everyone has that on a credit report, right? So when you make a late payment, and by the way, the way they report late payments these days have changed. Mm-hmm. Because back then, right after 30 days, the next day you were late. Now they give you a 30-day grace period. Oh. But if the payment is not made before 5 p.m., the 29th of the next month, then you get reported the first 30 days. That's a derogatory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Collections, charge-off. Let's say you had a credit card for 5-6 years. You know, you were paying it for 3-4 years. You ran into a hardship. You couldn't keep up with the payments anymore. You miss 6 months of payments, it gets charged off. That's a derogatory. Public records, mm-hmm. Lawsuits, judgments.
Do student loans fall in there as well?
Yes, absolutely. Because yeah. Here's the thing about student loans. Everyone keeps deferring the student loans.
Yeah, but right? Just, yeah, it's
and
kind of true.
That's actually, you shouldn't be doing that. You should at least try to make some sort of payment plan with them because now, one, it affects your credit, your DTI, because let's say you took out $6,000, mm-hmm. you deferred it for 5 years, now your loan is
$10,000. Right.
Now you're upside down with the loan. One, two, your late payments also. They're reported on the credit report is a derogatory if you miss a late payment. So I don't suggest anyone try to put the payment in deferment for too long, but if you have to, make sure you don't have a gap where it comes out of deferment and you're supposed to make a payment and go back into deferment.
Mm.
You need to avoid that.
Right? Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, we covered it pretty extensively. Like, we have millions of Americans that are in student loan debt.
It's a trillion-dollar deal.
Trillion-dollar industry. Debt. And it's like, you know, the first thing is like deferment, but it only lasts 6 to 12 months, man.
Correct.
Right? And that can affect you long-term, right? When it's time for you to now get the home, like student loan payment has affected you. Try to get the car, student, right? They're going to see that on that derogatory.
Because they calculate the monthly payment into your income, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, you know, you only make, I don't know, $2,000 a month or biweekly, whatever.
Yeah.
And your monthly payments are all your expense, including rent, food, whatever. Not food, sorry. Rent, bills, credit cards mm-hmm. is $1,500. Now you add your student loans in there. And now you only have $200 left.
Right.
How are you going to get a mortgage with extra money going to come in? You know, so it's a debt that you really don't want to carry with you, but we have to.
Right.
But you want to try to at least make some kind of payment towards it.
So with the derogatories, okay. So some of the common derogatory items are late payments,
credit cards. Even I did a video about when you move out of your apartment, how to exit your apartment, your Verizon bill, your Con Edison bill, all that goes on your credit report. There's a way to shut everything off before you walk out of that apartment so it doesn't travel.
So what's the way that you do
that? So basically, make a checklist of everything that you had when you were living in that apartment. Cable, phone, water, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
A week before you move out, you're supposed to call those company and let them know you're leaving to disconnect the service on this date
mm-hmm.
and send you the bill. Right? A lot of people just walk out and leave everything.
Right.
The Verizon bill, cable bill, you're supposed to return those boxes. If you don't, you get charged. You're renting those boxes. You don't own them. That's a stupid way of having a debt on your credit report to mess your credit up. Right?
Yeah.
You can just return the boxes, pay the final bill.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Not for sure. So, all right. So, what about
child support? Sorry.
Yeah.
We're going to get there.
What about tax liens?
So, tax liens shows up on your credit, but it was up to 2 years ago, they stopped reporting it, but it stays in the public record. So, let's say you're applying for a mortgage. When they pull for your mortgage report, they pull LexisNexis, your tax liens show up there. So, it can affect you from getting the mortgage, but it's not on your credit report anymore, but it stays in public record.
What's LexisNexis?
LexisNexis is a company out in Atlanta that carries all public record data for everyone.
Okay. Okay.
For all the court system, bankruptcies, everything.
So what about credit card judgments? A lot of people have credit card judgments.
Oh, man, listen, that's a good topic. And how that happens, you know, let's say you have a credit card. I go back to Chase because I deal with them every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you had a Chase credit card for 5 years. 3 years, you paid it. After that, you went into a hardship. You couldn't pay it no more. And it went to collections. And you didn't even pay it then. Right before the statute of limitation comes to an end, every debt has a statute of limitation.
Mm-hmm.
Every state has a statute of limitation. Right before the statute of limitation ends, it goes to an attorney. They pick it up and obtain a default judgment against you, renewable for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. So 10 years?
10 years.
But it can be wiped off. All right. Even if you have the 10-year judgment, it can still be like wiped off before that 10 years.
Absolutely. Right? If it's resolved. Correct. If you don't resolve it, then it can renew again.
How do you resolve it?
So you got to make an agreement with the judge, but not with the judge, with the attorney that's suing you. They could either go back into court and resolve it or resolve it over the phone. Make an agreement, say, listen, the debt's $5,000. You know, I can give you $2,000, call it a day.
All right. So
the debt has to be resolved.
Resolved. That made me think about something because we keep it real on the show, right? So usually in our community, what happens is that you fall into hard times, you don't pay your bills, they call you, and you don't answer the phone call.
Yeah.
You try to just ignore it.
That's the bad thing.
You ignore
that's the problem.
Block the number.
But that's what
we're going to do.
That's how it turns into a judgment.
Right.
That's the start of it.
All right, what's your advice for people that are doing that? Like, I always tell people, you can't avoid problems. You have to face it, right? So, and then especially credit card companies, they'll work with you.
Absolutely.
But people still mentally, I guess it's just, nobody really wants to be embarrassed or they don't want to even kind of go through that if they know that they don't have the money to pay it. So you got yourself in a bad situation. You can't pay your bill. You're late on your bills. What do you do? Like, what's the best
way? So here's the thing. It's funny we're talking about this. A lot of people don't want to resolve the debt because they've been told that you don't have to pay your debt back. It's going to disappear. A lot of people, that's what a lot of people say, you know, oh, my friend said I don't got to pay it back. Is it true? Do I have to? Yes, you have to.
Yeah.
Right. But you have to answer the phone, man. Like, you can't. They'll work with you. Yeah. They're willing to work with you.
This is, no, that's, I'm just, the willing to work with you part is 100% valid. Yeah. I have friends, and my, I mean, personally, I've done it myself. Like, I've seen my interest rate go up when I was in college to a point I was like, wait, I owe $30,000. Right. I'm 21.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't know what to do. So I'm like, I literally was listening to Hot 97, I promise you. And I heard Angie was talking about debt consolidation.
Yeah.
And I called this company.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, all right, well, we'll do it. And I did it. And like, rather than paying it 30, right, the bank is looking like, hey, can we get some money?
Right.
So I'm like, all right, we agreed to an amount. And I'm like, all right, I'll pay that off.
There's a difference between debt consolidation and debt settlement.
Yeah.
I am not into debt consolidating. I don't think anyone should do it. And I'll tell you why.
Because
once the debt's charged off, you have to pay something, but not the full thing. But consumers don't know that.
Right.
So they go to debt consolidating where they make you pay the whole debt over 3 years. You kind of just paid the debt twice.
Yeah.
Well, because it went insurance paid it or however the bank resolved it. And now you pay the whole thing back again to the banks. It's once the debt's charged off, it's better to settle the debt and move on. You owe $5,000, we get that down to $1,800.
Right.
I would rather pay that and move on because your credit's still shot.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get the card back. Right? So why even pay it twice?
Right. Yeah, I've seen people do it. Like, I've seen, like you just said, like, hey, I owe 20. Listen, I have 10.
Right.
And the bank is like, you know what? I'll take that 10 rather than have nothing from you for the next 5 years.
So here's a trick behind what Rashad was talking about. Collection agencies and attorneys do skip trace. What a skip trace is where they pull your credit and they see that if you're paying like...
What's it called?
Skip trace.
Skip trace?
Yeah, S-K-I-P-T-R-A-C-E.
Okay.
So skip trace works like this. They want to find you. They want to see where you are to serve your judgment. They pull your credit. They see you have this address, that address, that address. That's how the marshals end up coming to your house and dropping a note off. Right? So they see if you're paying any debts back. So now let's say... you're completely shot. Your score is 500. You have every single debt out there. When they do that skip trace, they know you're completely broke. Or you seem to be broke.
Mm-hmm.
You have a better chance of getting a lower number on that settlement. Because they'll take anything to move on and resolve it and keep it going, right? If you're applying for a mortgage, they see an inquiry on there from a home mortgage company. Or you're trying to buy something. You have money. Everybody pops up. They want to settle. But they'll settle at a high number. And collection agencies work on commission. End of the month, you get the best number. Beginning of the month, you don't.
That's a,
so end of the month. Okay, I don't want people to forget that.
Don't let that go over your head.
Explain that. End of the month.
Collection agencies work in commission. It's a $15 hour job, but your job is to, you have to hit certain numbers at the end of the month. You have to hit, let's say your budget is $30,000. After that, you get commission. So that's why in the beginning of the month, let's say you had a debt for $5,000. They'll say, oh, we can only settle for $4,500, $4,000. Come down to the last 5 days of the month, that same debt for $1,800. But you can't get it off your credit report because the law states whether you pay or don't pay something, it stays on your credit report for 7 years.
Okay.
That's where my company comes in. I make your 7 years, 90 days.
Oh.
So I'm able to make your credit jump right back to 750, 800. Squeaky clean. Nothing ever comes back on your credit report.
Dope.
Nice. So, all right. Credit repair.
Oh, yes.
Can you talk about that?
There's a lot. What
you want to know? We were talking about off camera. You said that there's no such thing as a credit repair.
Okay, company. So listen. Credit repair doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Right? It's a scam. Right? That's why every single company. Can I call the companies out or not?
Yeah.
You don't care?
No, I mean, that's on you.
Your mom and pop company, Lexington Law, creditpair.com, Credit Saint. I want to mention someone else's name, but I don't want to.
Okay.
Anyway, they all do the same thing. Send dispute letters. With no letterhead. So you got to think about that. If I'm paying you $99, you said, oh, I'm going to fix your credit. Why is only the instructions on letterhead, but not the letter you sent to the credit bureau on letterhead? Looks like I'm sending the letter. One. Two, if you ever read those dispute letters, it's like your 10-year-old kid wrote it. Right? So, for example, let's say Verizon. You had a Verizon bill, you had Verizon home service, cable, internet, whatever it is that you have for Verizon, right? For over a year. All of a sudden, you moved out, you didn't pay the bill. Because you didn't return the box and the final bills, and you have this on your credit report. Verizon has the collection for you. They're going to write a letter. Please validate this debt. I never had this debt. Well, what did you have for the last 12 months? Because everything has a paper trail behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's what a letter never works. Now the letter goes to the credit bureaus. The credit bureau sends it to the Verizon. Verizon sends back your whole statement in a digital file, your checks that you made payments with. They even keep phone communication that you spoke to them. You spoke to us on this day. And that's all testifiable. I have it in my office. When you speak to these companies, oh, my client spoke to them on this day. Hmm. Right? So anyway, back to the whole credit report. The letters thing doesn't work because everything has a paper trail. One, there's no such thing as fixing credit. Every consumer has a right to dispute something on their credit if they believe it was reported erroneously or inaccurately. That's your right.
So from my understanding, it's like, and correct me if I'm wrong, they write a letter, or you can, everybody has the ability to write a letter to a company disputing something.
Correct.
If they don't respond to that dispute, it has to come off. Right?
That's correct. Correct.
So that's kind of what they do because they know most people aren't, they don't want to do it themselves.
Correct.
So they do it for them.
Correct. And the reason, and the other thing is that in the industry, there's something called servicing a debt and owning a debt. Let me explain that for you. I'll say it again. Servicing a debt and owning a debt. Owning a debt, there's only four companies in the industry that buys debts.
Okay.
Portfolio Recovery, Midland Funding, MCM, and Calgary Portfolio. Those four companies buy debts and they give you 30 days to resolve it. If you don't resolve it, they get a default judgment against you. Send it to an attorney. The attorney serves you. You got to show up in court. Blah, blah, blah. I shouldn't say blah, blah, blah. But the second thing is servicing a debt. So let's say Verizon. Come back to Verizon. RGM Acquisition is a collection agency. They don't own the debt. Verizon sent the debt to RGM for them to call you 10 times a day. They don't have the manpower to do that. So now when you send these letters, the collection agency was never supposed to be there. That's why the collection agency will come off your credit. That's all the letter does. But the debt comes back around 90 days later to another agency. So the debt is never really leaving you. So that everything has to be resolved. So back to the word of credit repair, yeah, it doesn't exist. Everyone has a right to contest something if it's not accurate on your credit report. But 9 out of 10 times, all these banks and these credit, they're so squeaky clean with their data now, like there's very minimal room for errors.
Hmm. That's important, man. You got to educate yourself. Right, like it, rather than paying $99, you can
do it yourself.
Read for about 2 hours a day,
correct,
and figure it out, man. It's valuable. So, like, you're saving your time and your money.
No, it's important. All right, okay. So now we're gonna go into our new topic, our new section.
Yeah, we got a whole new segment that we created. We're calling it 10 for 10. So we got 10 questions. Hopefully, all you can give us 10 answers. And it's courtesy of Instagram, pretty much. Our followers, we laid it out there that we're going to have credit as an episode, and we got a crazy response.
There's so much to learn about this credit industry, how it works, like how credit is built, how you get approved for a credit card. Like, there's a whole knowledge base on that. We're just touching, like, just...
Yeah, so we took 10, okay. And hopefully we can get 10 answers. We got 10 questions.
We're going to jump right into it. So... yeah, let's do it. All right, so yes, this is a new segment that we're going to do. Hopefully we'll do it every show.
Yeah,
or
I like this.
Maybe not every show, but depending on if it's an educational show like it is right now, where we're actually bringing somebody in. Every show is an educational show, but if this is a show where we're bringing an expert in, we're going to start a new segment called 10 for 10, right? Because as I always say, it's not our podcast, it's your podcast, it's the public's podcast,
right.
And the platform is to educate. So we're taking 10 questions from our listeners, and we're going to answer those questions, right? Yeah. And it's all on Instagram, so we'll put a post up a few days before, and we'll ask, you know, your questions, and then you guys just comment in the comment section, and then we'll pick 10 questions, and then we'll do it. So
ask the expert.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So we're going to start out with, the first question is from I_am_Asia. Shout out to her. She wants to know, how do you establish business credit?
All right. That's a good question. And this is actually a big topic, actually. So everyone seems to think that business credit, that once you register a company name and you have a website and a bank account, you have business credit. Actually, you don't have business credit. You're still PG and everything under your social. Business credit runs separately from your social. It's established on the tax ID. It has to stand alone by itself. It has to sit by itself. Mm. When you PG something, that goes on your personal credit.
PG, what's
personal
that?
Guarantee.
Okay.
Excuse me. It's when you PG something, it sits on your credit, on your personal credit. One, it affects your DTI, because if it's like an American Express charge card, you're swiping $30,000 a month.
Mm.
Remember, low debt, high score. That's affecting your score. And two, it makes your credit score drop, right? So business credit has to stand alone by itself on a tax ID. How do you establish it? There's a 10-step process. One, you have to be the tax ID, the bank account. You have to be registered in your newspaper, your county newspaper, on the two newspapers showing that you have your legitimate business. Mm-hmm. You can't have your home address as the business address because you need three scores: Experian, Equifax, and Dun & Bradstreet. Experian and Equifax does not recognize your home address as the business address and your cell phone as a business number. That's why I tell people, get a virtual space, 199, like Regis.
Well, what about P.O. Box?
No.
Can't have a P.O. Box.
Can't have a P.O. Box.
So, all right. I didn't know that. So you have, okay. So.
Because you need a receptionist and a phone number where they can call and verify you and send mails to.
Okay. So you can't get business credit without an address?
You need a physical address.
Like separate from your
home
address.
Outside your home address.
Exactly. You need an office address.
That's correct. That's why I say get a Regis space. 199 is the cheapest thing, right? Because it needs to be verifiable by Experian and Equifax. Because there's three scores. Dun & Bradstreet, Experian, Equifax. You need three scores. And all three bureaus is how you build business credit.
So why is TransUnion left out of that?
They just don't use it.
Okay.
It's not heavy enough.
All right.
You know? All right. So, okay. So let's stay on that for a little bit. So you, all right. You started a business. You got your LLC. You got your tax ID number.
Your bank account.
You opened your bank account.
Registered in the courthouse.
Yeah.
Newspaper.
Did all that.
Newspaper.
You did all that stuff. Now you, now you have to get an address.
Correct.
So now we're trying to build credit for the business, right? So you, you get a Google number.
Yeah, right? you can get a Google number.
Yeah, you get a number separate from your cell phone and get an address separate from your cell phone. Now, can the address be another, like say, can I use my sister's address, my brother's address?
Just separate from the one you live at.
Exactly.
Okay.
It can't be the one you live at.
So now how do you establish?
Now you have that, you need trade lines. So there's companies
There's companies
like Quills. There's like 10 other companies out there. I can't think of it right off the top of my head. But here's how it works. I have a whole list in my office. You reach out to them, and they give you 10. They give you trade lines. Trade lines are like loans. They'll give you like $1,000 credit limit. You have to use $50 for the next 6 months of pay on time. 50 or more. It's built just like you're billing personal credit, but it's to their vendors. So you need three vendors if you want to get cards from like Best Buy, Office Depot, Office Max, those guys. If you want credit cards from the bank, you need six vendors. Six vendors are six trade lines, right? And you build with that for 6 months. From there, you apply for your own credit cards. Now, if you want loans out of the bank, you have to have a P&L, a profit and loss, mm-hmm. and you have to have a tax return in order for the bank to extend loan onto the business. Because they have to see money coming into the company and money going back out, a P&L to see that, you know, you can pay the loans back.
Okay. Okay, next question.
All right, so we got our next question from Baba Lewis III. And he asks, can you establish credit for your children?
Absolutely. At 17 or 18 years old, yeah, you could. How you do it is that you add them as an authorized user on one of your credit cards. But with that, coming back to your story,
yeah.
It has to be a clean credit. You can't have high balances. You can't have derogatories, because whatever you do will affect that person.
Yeah, I got lucky. I'm going to be honest. This is like a true story. And I think I first noticed it when Michelle pulled my credit. And I was 26, and he was like, wait, you have 23 years of credit history.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. And then I realized that my parents put me on their card that they've had since 1985 or something like that. And I was like,
good history.
Oh, wow. And they've been responsible. So, like, yeah, that's dope.
It doesn't affect you.
Yeah, it affected me in a positive way.
Positive, right? Not a negative way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can do it, but it has to be clean history.
Okay.
Right? At age 17, moving on.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, so this is from Nellie Gibbs. She wants to know what the best way to repay student loans and what's the best way to handle student loan debt.
Oh, so we were talking about this earlier. So depending on the loan, if it's deferred or it's in collection, I mean, we kind of got to find out that. But anyway, the point is, if you have a bunch of student loans, everything is based off of an income. The payment plan is based off of an income base, right? So when you call a student loan, I suggest everyone create a payment plan. Like, don't keep deferring. It's not a good thing to do because it affects you from doing bigger purchases in the future. But what you do is you go to a student loan company, tell them you want to go into income-based repayment plan, and they send you a form you fill out. The trick to that is that make sure when you fill out the forms, you put that you have a lot of expenses. So the monthly payment is a low payment. And they lock you into that for a couple of years. And then you recertify again. But you want to put you have rent, car, daycare, whatever it is, to show that you have a lot of expenses. If not, they're going to hit you with a high monthly payment of $700 or more.
Yeah, we've seen. I've seen that. Yeah. Like, I've seen that.
That's how you trick it.
Yeah. So our next question is from...
And also, next thing. Yeah. If you have student loans from like two different, like Sallie Mae, Nelnet, and all that, you can actually have all of those loans refinanced into one loan. And I suggest everyone do that, so it's easy for you to track the payments and not making monthly payments to five different companies.
Yeah, that is 100% true, man. Like, I was, again, for, like, I have student loans. Like,
right.
The first thing what I did was, like, consolidate them all. So, yeah. Like, Navient is now my carrier.
One loan, correct, yeah.
Shout out to them. our next question is from @flow_bella_. And her question is, what are some ways I can fix my credit herself? Like, what can she do?
So, first off, you got to pull a report and pull a real-time report. Credit Karma is not accurate. It's not detailed. If you have a mortgage lender, those are the best reports because they try and merge and they give you your whole history for when you were 17 or when you got credit to current. Once you pull that report, you're able to see all the derogatories and the issues that are holding down your credit. If it's stuff that you know that was paid off already, you can dispute it with the bureaus that have like third-party collections that have that taken off.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to see the negatives on there and what debts they are so you can put a plan to address them. If there's some debts, you can do settlements. That you have to do settlements so you can call the creditors directly and negotiate with them to make a payment plan. You could even do one account a month until you get to your end result.
And some things is 100% accurate. Like, it'll show you that you missed a car payment in 2014.
It's very detailed.
Yeah.
Very detailed.
All right. So this is a big one. This is a big one. This is from @whocares_no_one. I like that.
Me too.
So, can child support be removed from your credit? And can we talk about the effects of child support on your credit?
So, child support, it reports as a collection debt, right? Yes, it can be removed. Actually, we're the only one who could remove them. A letter cannot remove them. The problem is, if we remove them, you cannot miss a payment again. Because if you miss a payment, it'll come back on. Same thing for late payments on credit card. I want to talk about that, actually. We can remove all your late payments, but you cannot miss any late payments moving forward. If not, it will come back on your credit report because the bank reports in a batch file. Hmm. Right? So child support can report. And it is a collection also. So if you're trying to buy something and your DTI is off and your numbers are off, it can affect the monthly payment that you're paying in child support can affect your approval of how much you can get approved for, if that makes sense.
All right, so our next one is from @dunn321, and he asked, when do agencies report debt balances? Is there a specific time during a month that they do it? Or
When he says agencies, what do you talk
so
about?
So I'm assuming that he means, like, when does, like, TransUnion or Experian or Equifax, is there a specific time during the month?
Well, the bureaus update on the 1st to the 5th of every month, but the data comes from the bank.
Okay.
Or the collection agency or the creditor. It does not come from the bureau.
Okay.
They're the one that just house the data, and on the 1st to the 5th of every month, they update new reports.
Okay.
So your bank reports different days. Some days they report, the 10th, the 15th, whatever your billing cycle is.
But that's something you can find out. Like,
yes.
Also,
to make it easy for you, if you want to make sure you're never late on your payment, you can call all your credit card companies and ask them to make your due date the same day every month.
Mm.
So if you have 5 cards, you can make them, all of them, the 15th of every month.
Right.
So you know, if you're a person that keeps forgetting to make payments, you know on the 15th every bill is due, if you can afford to do it.
Right.
Okay. Rage Against Ordinary has a question. She wants to know, after Chapter 7 bankruptcy, how long does that stay on your report?
Bankruptcy stays for 7 years. And here's the crazy thing about bankruptcy now. One, the creditors can contest the bankruptcy.
Really?
They don't have to. Like, let's say you have Bank America is notorious for this. They can contest it. They don't have to accept the bankruptcy.
Mm.
They can say, no, I don't, we don't want to.
Well, I didn't know that.
They can contest the bankruptcy. Two, the new bankruptcy laws, depending on which chapter you're filing, you have to pay a percentage of your debt back in court. Right? Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You have to pay a percentage. And that's determined by the judge, the magistrate, or whoever's doing your bankruptcy, what your percentage is. So if you're filing bankruptcy, you got to really think about it. If you don't have, like, $50,000 to $100,000 worth of debt, it's not really filing bankruptcy. It's not really worth it, in my eyes, to file bankruptcy for 7 years.
That was going to be like my next kind of question off of that is, like, when would it be, I guess, appropriate to file for bankruptcy, right? There's a certain amount of debt that you should
have. I mean, there's a couple qualifying scenarios. I mean, if you're not working, that you can't do anything about it. You can't pay anything, right. But if you are working, you have some savings. Because when you file bankruptcy, you have to disclose all your assets, right? So, you know, if you have money in the bank, you're like, well, why can't you pay this? Knowing that the bank can contest it, not all banks have to. And that happened to me, actually, because I did it many years ago, and they contested it. Then you can't even put, you can't open an account for 3 years, a bank account, but you can't show that you have any kind of money.
Any bank account?
Any bank account.
Oh, wow.
Because they can go back and, oh, well, you have money, you know? It becomes very messy. But, again, with the bankruptcy, and it's not as easy as, like, the way it was in 2010. You file it and you walk away. You got to pay a percentage back. So, you know, I think everyone should really consider, depending on the scenario, consider filing bankruptcy. It's not the best route. It is a route, but it's not the best route, depending on your situation. But it stays there for 7 years. And then you can, the other thing about that, you burn, let's say, in the industry, there's prime and subprime banks. Mm-hmm. So let's say you file bankruptcy for Discover, American Express, Barclay, Chase. Once you file bankruptcy, you can't go back to do business with those guys again. They're not going to extend any credit. So now you're kind of stuck in a subprime rate, subprime bank, kind of rest of your life where you're paying high interest rates. Because major banks are not going to extend any kind of credit card to you.
That's valuable.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.